Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show today, it's a British Podcast Awards special. That's right, we're here at Tom Court Road to see the winners and losers of the British Podcast Awards. I'm going to go to the bar and have a lovely time and watch the ceremony. I'm going to send a friend of the show, Ollie Pitt, out to chat to nominees, winners and guests. I might chat to some people as well. We'll see you in a bit.
So while everyone has a lovely time out there, I'm in here, in the green room, waiting for the winners to come through. And I will find out how they feel about their win and also try and get some more information about their feelings about the media space in general.
Taking the British Podcast Awards for Podcast of the Year, it is A Positive Life, HIV from Terence Higgins, Tuesday.
I'm Arlie Adlington. I'm an audio producer. I was the producer on this show.
I'm Stephen Rajam. I'm the creative director of Overcoat Media, an indie based in Cardiff in Wales, which made this podcast.
My name is Emma Goswell. I do my own podcast, but on this, A Positive Life, I was the assistant producer.
And you know me, Emma, because I've worked on a podcast with
we
you
have
before.
Worked.
I didn't recognise you.
You look more beardy. I didn't recognise you.
Yeah, oh, we've worked on a podcast before for the BBC, and I couldn't recognise you because you're all dolled up.
Yeah, well, I look much better with makeup on than I do on a Zoom call at 9 a.m, don't I? Hopefully.
Yeah, and we've only met on Zoom. Do you know what? I was like, oh,
so
God, I recognise your face.
I don't want to ignore
all of you, sorry. Right, well, no, well, tell me about the podcast then.
Yeah, it was a 8-part series which looked at the last 40 years of the HIV epidemic in the UK. It started by telling the story of the life story of Terence Higgins, starting from his childhood in Wales. He was one of the first British people to die of an AIDS-related illness in 1982. We were really lucky to get to tell his life story and then actually meet a very wide range of different people of all kind of different ages who live with HIV in the UK, who shared stories from their lives. It was a very special show to get to work on.
The issue of HIV and AIDS is still such an important one. We have come so far in the last 40 years, but there is still HIV stigma. And I think it was really important that we made this podcast in 2023 and reflected on what's happened because, you know, there are still people facing stigma for having HIV today, even though, if you are undetectable, cannot pass it on. You equals you. And I don't think enough people are still aware of that message. So I think this podcast was really important to make.
What do you think it is about a podcast, like a podcast specifically, that's sort of conducive to being able to tell a story like that?
I think what a podcast does is it's a very intimate medium. It really enables listeners to get to the kind of, hopefully get to the soul of the people that are contributing. And in this podcast, what Arlie and Emma did so brilliantly as a producer and assistant producer, and Sam Smith, our fantastic presenter, is together they were able to speak to and get the experiences of people, a huge diversity of people who had been affected down the last 40 years of by HIV, and really get this incredible array of stories, because these are stories about people who are, you know, these are stories of lives lived. This is, you know, a lot of, we want to really convey the totality of experience and what these experiences were. And, you know, I think the podcast meant that people could listen to these contributions, listen to these interviews, and really get into these lives. It was beautiful.
Where do you see podcasts going in the next few years?
That's a big question, Ollie.
Well, I just thought I'd put you on the spot.
The thing is, there are a million podcasts out there, and it's really difficult for a lot of independent podcasters. So, you know, I've worked on big podcasts like this with big organisations. I've worked with the BBC. But it's real a struggle for people who are just scrabbling around and trying to, like, fund them themselves. So I'd like to think that there'd be more money for independent podcasters. Whether that'll happen, I don't know. But it'd be great because, you know, there are a million and one stories out there. And it's been wonderful to be able to tell those stories on this podcast.
I mean, Overco Media are based in South Wales, are really proudly based in South Wales, making stories from South Wales to the whole world. And I think, you know, we're here in London, a beautiful venue. And it's sometimes it's easy to think that the kind of podcast landscape exists in big centres like London, Manchester, Glasgow. But actually, there are brilliant podcast makers, whether they're independent companies, whether they're individuals, all over the UK and all over the world. And I think one of the things that I'd like to see much more of the industry, of the people who have the funds and the kind of resources to kind of pay for podcasts, to look beyond the big metropolitan centres, to look beyond, you know, London, Manchester, Glasgow, all these places, and look to, you know, there's such an amazing opportunity to commission content that really conveys the totality of human experience from across the whole diversity of the UK, and we should be doing more of that.
Well, congratulations, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening. I'll let you get on because you've got to...
Thank you.
Jochen Varian.
So we are the World Beatbox Champions, the Beatbox Collective. You've got MC Zany, myself as Basics, Ballsy and Hobbit. And we're here live at the Podcast Awards 2023.
It would be in the mix.
With live with the Media Podcast.
All from the mouth, all from the mouth, drop, all from
drop
the mouth.
The bass,
That's amazing.
Okay, so I'm Mohit Bakai, I'm the controller of Radio 4, and obviously we commission The Skewer, which is has just won this wonderful award.
Which you must be absolutely thrilled about. I mean, you've got it under your arm with a glass of champagne. It looks very, very swish. It's going to go on the Radio 4 trophy shelf. Well, let's speak about Radio 4 and podcasts. I mean, how important are they, and how's that shifted for Radio 4 in recent years?
Well, it's a great question, and it's, I mean, they're hugely important. I mean, I have to say, with The Skewer, it's kind of become something that we, to an extent, we get rather blasé about, because it's won so, it's won, this is the second time I've picked this award up for John. And he's picked up pretty much every award going. I think probably he's picked this up more than 20 times now for The Skewer. So, and we're delighted by that, because it's a real... The Skewer, in some ways, has been kind of right in the forefront of our, you know, efforts to really break into the podcasting world and to show the Radio 4 can really flex and move with the times and kind of follow the way people are now consuming brilliant audio. So it matters hugely.
But The Skewer is a very different offering to what most people might consider a podcast. It seems quite unusual that you would sort of pin your hopes on something so left field, I suppose.
Well, I think, but that is part of the joy of podcasting, isn't it? You know, it's got, it can find a real niche audience, and a podcast at The Skewer is nothing if it's not niche. I mean, it's a brilliantly anarchic, you know, satirical, kind of slightly dark take on the world. And I think that's perfect for podcasting, because it can, you know, as all good podcasts do, it kind of finds an audience out there that might not necessarily find it purely on the radio.
You know, I'm thinking about sort of linear radio. Listeners generally just kind of, you know, all stations are finding it difficult to hold on to listeners. Where do you see that on-demand audio content kind of shaping the future of Radio 4, and how are you going to get more of those sort of younger listeners in as well?
Well, I mean, I think the truth is, one of the joys of podcasting and digital listening is it's a brilliant way to recognise that there is that audience out there who want intelligent speech, want comedy, drama, all the things we do, but actually, because they are citizens of the 21st century and they're used to being able to consume things on their own terms, in their own space, you know, doing what they want to do, podcasting is a brilliant way for them to do that. And the great joy for me is that we've got amazing program makers and podcasters all around the country who've been able to rise to that challenge and do what Radio 4 does, which is help us make sense of the world, help make people laugh, make people cry, give them all the things that Radio 4 has always done, but in a way that allows people to consume us on their terms. And I think what it's done is given Radio 4 a place that might have, in a linear space, not been able to get those people, find them where they are. So it's perfect for us because it allows us to still be Radio 4 and preserve what we do in the linear space so brilliantly, I think, but also reach out and bring a whole new generation into speech audio, which is obviously the thing we all love.
And while I've got you, Gary Lineker clause. Want to say a few words on that?
Well, I think the BBC's come to, you might be expecting me to say this, a rather good, much clearer position. You know, it will make certainly my life and most presenters' life a lot easier because there's much more clarity now about what we can and can't say.
Joshua, which is the gold winner?
You ready? The news agents.
Hi, Ollie.
Hello, John.
How are you?
Hello, Emily. Oh,
hurry up, get over yourselves and move on.
Okay,
just in 20 seconds, say why it means so much. It's the happiest day of my whole life. No.
Yeah, that's all I want. I just want voxes of you just saying how amazing it is. Yeah,
I got married a month ago, and it's frankly, that was nothing on this.
If you could have showed us this day a year ago when we were fledgling, starting out, thinking, what on earth are we doing? We've just all left sort of good, reputable jobs to do something that is completely
batshit crazy.
Batshit crazy and brand new. I would not have believed we'd be standing here holding the winning trophy of the Daily Podcast Award. I can't believe it.
What made you do that then? If you had a secure job with a broadcaster and then you got offered this opportunity, what made you think, actually, yes, this is the right move for me?
Okay. So how many great opportunities come along where you think, oh, we're going to start something new with a blank sheet of paper that hasn't sort of really been done in a kind of different sort of way, and you just think, if you're not going to take an opportunity like that, what are you going to jump at? And it just seemed risky, full of jeopardy, possibility of failure high, but we sort of backed ourselves. We've got a fantastic team of people behind us, and they are amazing. And you've just got to, every now and then in life, just you peer over the edge and you think, you know what, I'm going to jump.
I mean, ultimately, it is a spectacular team, best I've ever worked with. And as John said as well, I mean, yeah, it was a tremendous risk, and it was a leap in the dark. But how many chances do you get to change the way that news is being consumed? And, you know, that might sound a bit grand, but it's something that we've started this year. I'm so struck by the sort of people that sort of come up to us and say, I don't watch a lot of news, particularly younger people, but we listen to your show. And you know what? Working with these two legends every day is also a complete thrill. And I think the whole team feel
could
that
you
way.
Me a thank you letter.
Every day I do. And it's thrilling. I mean, and this award is a recognition of all that for the team in particular. It's thrilling.
I'd also say the media landscape is changing. And we were working in something which was, you know, established and, what's that word they use? You know,
legacy.
Sort of legacy media. And people kept on telling you, oh, you know, the audiences are falling away, oh, nobody's staying up, or nobody's watching TV, nobody's tuning into bulletins. And you either think, oh my God, I'm going to take that very personally because nobody's tuning in anymore, or else you think, well, I still believe in actually what we're doing. I still believe in the news that we're covering. Maybe we have to go towards that audience and start telling it in a different way, finding different audiences and working out the ways that you're reaching people's ears or eyes that isn't the same old way of doing things. And so actually, it just made us all get off our backsides and go, I still believe there's a genuine interest and a genuine audience for the news that we're covering. We just have to find the people. And we have, you know, and it's a testament, honestly, to the listeners out there who tell us, who actually come and find us and tell us that they're getting their news in a new way that they find enjoyable and that they keep coming back for. So yeah, I mean, we're really happy this medium exists and that we can work with it.
And there's no doubt you've made a splash. So where do you take it from here? Where do you take the news agents? What's the next logical step for it? Or do you just keep going?
Isn't it? Or the Maldives, yeah.
Right, Comoros. A lot of news going on in the South Pacific.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's really healthy to have a sense of fear of failure.
Yeah.
we get to the end of a podcast recording, and think, yeah, that was good. Shit, what are we going to do tomorrow? And I think that that's what keeps you keen. Are there better ways of telling the story? Are there better ways of, you know, giving analysis and insight into what is going on? And we're sort of, the three of us, I think, are hungry to do that. So,
and also what, quite self-critical.
Yeah.
I mean, quite often we'll finish recording and I'm bad.
She's
at
particularly
a
particularly critical, I go, have to say.
That was shit. I don't think we got our point across. I don't think we landed that one, did we? And our lovely editor goes, yeah, I think it was a pretty good discussion. You know, haven't heard it anywhere else. And I'm like, not sure.
But also remember, I mean, this year, actually, arguably, since 2014, which has been a sort of crazy period, you could say 2023 has been one of the quieter new years in the last sort of 10 years. But there's been a huge appetite for what we've been doing, and 2024
is going to be
a bigger year.
Got you. Well, and competition's going to be more fierce, isn't it? You've already, you know, there's a few more podcasts being announced. So how are you going to react to those?
We'll just keep doing what we're doing.
Actually, it's good. I think it's good to have competition. I think it's stupid to think that you hold a position that can't be overtaken, and I think it's going to make us improve what we do. You know, four billion people are going to the polls next year around the world in elections. That's quite a lot of coverage for us to get our teeth into.
What is it they print on the mirror in your rear view, on your, you know, in your car? It says the object is closer than you think, and just keep that in mind, that there are plenty of objects who want to get closer to where we're doing. And we will rise to that challenge, hopefully, and fear of failure, but also kind of confident that we've got something to say and a different way of doing it.
John's been in the States too long. They don't print that on our mirrors.
That's 8 years in the US.
Well, enjoy the rest of your evening, and massive congratulations. Yeah, lovely to meet you. Take care.
I'm here with Morten, CEO of Podimo. Is it your first British Podcast Awards?
It is indeed.
So you're very lucky in that you get to go all around Europe with all your different podcast divisions. What's the UK market like compared to everywhere else?
The Podcast Awards is the biggest one I've been to, so it's a bigger market, definitely. Further along than a lot of other markets, I would say. So it's a more mature market. Lots of competition, healthy competition, but it's great opportunity.
It's been a busy time for Podimo. Here in the UK, a lot of shows. But kind of around Europe, people might not know, subscription app. It's kind of a different market if you're a creator in Denmark versus if you're a creator here, isn't it?
Yeah, very much. I think in Denmark, for example, I think 75% of the revenue is actually subscription. So there's been a tremendous turnaround in terms of subscription, really grabbing a large and growing the market. So we see that the Netherlands is now more also the biggest part of the market is subscription, and we continue to see the same pattern. So subscription is definitely a growing business in a lot of the non-English speaking markets, so to say.
And it's different for creators there, isn't there? Because sometimes we forget that the UK is a really big advertising market, and that's not necessarily the same in every country, is it?
No, I think if you go into smaller language markets, like you see, for example, with news media, they're also struggling in smaller language markets, and that goes for podcasting as well, even though listenership is the same as in UK. So like, I don't know, 35-40% of people listening to podcasts, there's simply not enough scale still to make a viable business in advertising.
And so what do you see? You get a great view, I guess, your analytics in all these markets, what people are listening to. Are there any categories or topics that just do well in places or less well in others? What's the secret of European content?
Obviously, we're very local in our approach in each market, so we tailor the approach to each individual market. But if you look at like genres, like true crime is everywhere, and a big genre, and an increasing genre as well. And then very much the talk formats. There's not like something that's very specific to markets that's unique. Obviously, they're executed locally with a local flavor, but it's actually quite interesting to see. I think if we went to very far away markets, then they'll probably be different. But if you look across Europe, it's actually very, very similar in terms of what people they prefer to listen to.
And also, a lot of it's driven by big personalities. You have that here in the UK. I know in a lot of your markets, people who are jumping ship from commercial broadcasters or public broadcasters to podcasting. It's suddenly created much of a market in audio for talent that maybe hasn't existed before.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, we see that also in markets like Denmark, the Netherlands, Norway. Public services is very dominant player there, and For us, it's it's a natural step for some creators. They'll move from public service to the commercials, and it's a good breathing ground for us in terms of talent. So we're excited about it. And to be honest, we don't see it as a threat as much. Mm. We see it more as an opportunity to really build talent that we can then work together with at a later stage.
And also, it's quite interesting when you're part of a network. I know that some of those talent who have shows then go on to do more shows with you, which is probably not something people have seen here in the UK.
Yeah, we don't have the same limitations in Denmark. You aren't allowed in the same way to lock the creators in for competition reasons. So in a market like Denmark, you see creators move around and being both on commercials but also on the public stations. And that goes for a lot of the European markets, actually.
So what are you looking at here in the UK? What have you been surprised by, or what are you thinking about as you see everybody here at the British Podcast Awards tonight?
I think that we have two shows that are nominated, so that's really, really great, right? But it's still very early days for us in the UK. It's very much, we're still a startup, so it's about exploring and learning and figuring out what the right approach is. We've got a lot of data, a lot of learnings, and we're building our playbook, and then we'll see when the right moment is for us to enter with our subscription service as well.
Well, have a great night.
Thank you very much. You too.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
More winners coming towards me. This is amazing. It's exciting. What are you drinking?
Still water in a can.
Amazing.
I wanted tap water.
Oh, right. Okay. Still water in a can. Well, look, let's hear about the podcast. Tell me about the podcast.
I'm Susie Grant, executive producer. Listen. I'm Mindy Rackerton. I'm the presenter of 28-ish Days Later, which is the podcast that's just won Best New Podcast 2020. Or new, it's one new. I don't know, it's best. It's just one new podcast.
New podcast.
So 28 Days Later is a 28-part series about the menstrual cycle, but actually it's a massive exploration of like where women are at now in the world, and it looks at medical research, it looks at sort of myths, it looks at cultural stigma and social stigma, and there's a big historical lens on how we see the female body and the womb, and where do we not go? We go down all
everywhere.
Sorts of
rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Well, and also, tell me about Listen.
We make loads of big titles. Obviously, we make 28 Days Later, but we make things like Titting About with Audible, which is French and Saunders' podcast. And, you know, we also just won silver for Where Are You Really From, which is Podomo. We have a really, like, multi-disciplined team covering, you know, from entertainment all the way through to factual comedy. You name it, we do it.
And how are you sort of finding the podcast landscape at the moment? Have you noticed any sort of trends and shifts in it in recent years that you're kind of having to sort of adapt to?
I think, you know, everyone knows it's a really difficult time to be in podcasting. There's lots of uncertainty, but for Listen, you know, we're in a really great place. We think we've got the best team going, so we're winning lots of commissions, and you know, we're always very busy, so we're really grateful for that. But I think in podcasting it's amazing. There's so many like opportunities, and you think that something like 28-ish, you know, 5 years ago, no one would have made this, and we got to make it, and it's incredible, and it's been recognised, which is awesome.
And amazing. Was it your idea 28-ish days later?
Yeah, it was. I was trying to figure out how to have a baby. Obviously, I know how to have a baby, but I was trying to figure out, you know, yeah, if there was anything, yeah, yeah, anything extra I sure could, you know, do. And I started reading some books. I was like, oh my gosh, I absolutely know nothing about my own body, my reproductive system, and all the hormones. And it was just like, we have to make a series about this. We have to tell everybody what's actually going on in the body. And luckily, I wasn't wrong. And loads of people also didn't know. Loads and loads of people also didn't know. And it's changed loads of people's lives. We get daily, weekly emails still, like a year or so down the line, from people just saying, this has changed my life. I went to my doctor. I forced a referral. I've actually had PCOS diagnosed, or I've been on a fertility journey for ages and I never understood the hormones people were talking to me about, and now I do. And, you know, like, it's had a massive impact. We've been to the Department of Health and Social Care and talked to them about it. And yeah, we're so proud of this series. And Ellie Sands, the amazing series producer, and Georgia McAndrew, another producer on the series, and the beautiful music, of course, which is a crucial part of it, by Rebecca Rees. It was just an amazing team.
It's amazing. We had like an all-female team from start to finish. So even in our sound designers, we had like incredible, like Charlie Brandon King and Olga Reed as well, who, you know, she's being nominated for BAFTAs and all sorts of amazing things. So we're just so proud of it. I'm so pleased it's been recognised.
Do you think that this kind of subject matter, you know, so sex and relationships, that kind of stuff, just there seems to be, I don't know, just a great match with podcasting, that perhaps it couldn't quite work as well with any other kind of medium. What do you think it is about podcasting that allows that, I guess?
I think it's intimacy. I think a good podcast at its best feels really authentic, and the person with you, talking to you, it all feels like you're with somebody, it's personable, and you can listen wherever you are at any point, at any time, and you can share them really easily, much more so, and you can listen again, and you can sort of, it's almost bookmark things, and I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Because the boundary now is really blurred between radio and podcast. So, and this is a radio commission as well, really important to say. You know, this is BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds commission. But yeah, there's something about, I think you can find something quite specific to you in the world of podcasts, which is perhaps harder to find.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. You're like, I just agree.
Actually, India, no, that's not.
No, what a load of rubbish. I'll let you get on with your evening.
I'm Liam Preston, and this is...
My name's Matt Dearsley.
And we are the Dad Still Standing podcast.
We're a podcast for dads that have lost babies, trying to guide them through the grief, trying to give them sort of a message of hope that they can get through it. And, you know, we just want to help them through it, really, don't we?
And we are the winners of the best podcast of the year for parenting, which is incredible because, you know, for a lot of dads out there, they don't believe their parents anymore. And so to offer help and to offer support is an incredible feeling, and it's just wonderful tonight.
How did you go about getting the podcast off the ground in the first instance? Was it something you did independently, or did you go to a production company?
No, we literally had a conversation. So we both play for a football team for bereaved dads. We literally had a conversation at football one training night and said, do you want to do a podcast? The answer was yes. We bought two mics off Amazon. We recorded into our laptops and our iPads respectively during lockdown. You know, edited it ourselves, we produced it ourselves, and then eventually we had a little bit of exposure via the BBC, and we got basically signed to Factory Studios, so they now do all our production for us, Ben Firth. So,
but it's incredible for us to go from two dads on a field in the middle of nowhere 2.5 years later to having the best parenting podcast of the year, only because we said, would you be interested in doing a podcast? Yes. And yeah. I think that's what's amazing about podcasts as a format, is that if you have a niche, if you have an interesting story to tell, or you can help somebody, and our podcast helps people, you can have incredible exposure. And to have the best parenting podcast of the year helping dads who've lost children is the most amazing feeling in the world.
It's just absolutely insane. It's absolutely blown my mind. You know, as Liam said, when we started, we had two caveats, and that was that it wasn't going to be depressing, that if someone listened to it and they were in a dark place, it wasn't going to take them further into that dark place. And also, we wanted it to be funny, and we wanted it to be relatable. Never in my wildest dreams did I envisage that we would win a British Podcast Award, let alone get nominated. So you know, I'm absolutely just bowled over with it.
We were crying walking to the stage, and like, I'm not sure that's how it's supposed to be at these types of things, but like, as two, like, you know, as two guys, and it's really difficult for men to talk about mental health, and especially to talk about mental health when it's in a real bad state, which is a lot of the feelings that many men feel after losing a child. For us to find a way to make that relatable, and for us to find a way that made other dads feel less lonely, less suicidal, to feel like they weren't alone, is an incredible feeling. What we felt was such a niche area of parenting and a niche area of mental health has been recognised in this way. When we set the podcast up, and Matt's looking at me, because when we set the podcast up, we were going, do you think we could help one other guy? Because there was no one for either of us when I lost my child and when Matt lost his kids. There was no one for us who sounded like us, who were saying the same things that we were. That just didn't exist. That support doesn't exist for men. And so for us to...
It does now because of this podcast.
Yeah. But for us to say, someone in Essex is listening, like someone in Northampton is listening, and then suddenly it's, well, someone in California is listening, and now someone in Sydney is listening, and to take something that is so personal and so isolating, like grief, and to hit people right across the globe was an emotional thing for both of us. And to then say, well, you've just won the best parenting podcast of 2023... and we're just two guys going, we don't know what we're doing, but we're just trying to help somebody. It's the best feeling in the world.
Do you know what? We're just two dads from Essex that we sit in front of a mic. We have, you know, the gloves are off. We tell it as it is. We try not to be too depressing about it. We try to make it funny. It's just blown my mind. I'm just lost for words.
And I think there's something about how you tell a story in this medium, which is, we could have got other dads on to tell a very sad story, and our stories are really sad. But we didn't want to do that. What we wanted to do was to create a podcast that was a toolkit. It was a resource that at every stage of bereavement that you will go through after losing a child, whether that's planning a funeral, whether it's going back to work, whether it's how you grieve differently to your wife, our podcast is a toolkit in how you deal with that as a dad. And I think that's different to many other podcasts, which is why I think we've been recognised tonight. And I'm so pleased.
You're clearly delighted. I'm going to let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening. It's been a pleasure meeting you both. Honestly, you. Massive congratulations. Go and enjoy it.
Cheers.
Noshin Iqbal from Today in Focus.
And I'm Michael Safi, Noshin's co-host.
The Guardian, yes. Of course. Oh, right, yes, I'm there. Good, right. You've got me on the level. So, first of all, congratulations. I mean, what does it mean to, you know, win this award in, you know, what is a very competitive landscape when it comes to news podcasts?
I feel I shouldn't answer this because I keep saying, I thought we were going to lose to the news agents. Yeah. I thought we were going to lose to the news agents. We're coming to lose. But fair play, huge year for them.
Yeah, this is an incredibly competitive category. It's become only more competitive. The competition is so high. But we have an incredible team who, like, turn up every day and produce excellent stuff. We know how good this podcast is, and this is a really nice affirmation of that.
Well, let's pull back the curtain a little bit and find out how the sausage is made. I mean, how much work does it go into making? Because it's a daily podcast, isn't it? So, yeah, how much work goes into producing your show? You know, how many people are involved? How much time does it take?
I'm tired. I'm very tired. That's how much it takes. Yeah. No, well, and everyone's just working really hard. How many producers do we have? Two execs. We have eight. I can't remember the number.
Yeah.
I feel like it's small given the output.
Exactly. I mean, if you listen to the end of an episode of The Daily, there's about 2 minutes of credits. Ours are about 15 seconds, basically.
Yeah, one producer and one exec and one presenter per episode, usually. Sometimes two producers. And yeah, you're right, The Daily has an army.
And it's not just chat. It's archive, it's tape, it's us listening to things over and over again to make sure they're accurate, that we're not just giving you facts, but like telling you a story. And that just takes so much time and so much effort. And it's very nice to know that people are listening and that, you know, a jury of our peers...
People are listening and people like it. That's always nice. We keep being told it's a growth market, right? And you can see how crowded it is and how everyone's entering. But I really honestly think there's space for everyone because people are interested. And there's different ways of doing news. There's like, you know, your authoritative journalist giving you their opinion on things. There's us doing mini documentaries.
Space for everyone, but Only one winner though, so.
Massive congratulations.
Hi, I'm John Shields. I'm the director of podcasts at The Economist, and we just won Network or Publisher of the Year 2023.
But which one are you going to go for?
I think we count as a publisher, given that we have been a magazine since 1843, doing the news since then, and we have been doing podcasts for actually longer than most, but yeah, I think that makes us a publisher.
Oh, sorry, I should say I'm John Prideaux. I work with John at The Economist. Our podcasts were in the iPod demo when Apple launched the iPod back whenever it did.
What have you noticed change? I mean, we're at this award ceremony, let's face it, it's absolutely massive, and I think a lot of people within podcasting would think, you know, if you asked them 10 years ago, would there be a ceremony like this? They'd be like, nah, no way. But what other things have you sort of noticed in the industry that's changed and shifted?
What's changed is the number of podcasts, but also the quality. There's lots more money to be made than there ever used to be. What that means for us is, we're lucky because we're backed by our bosses just to keep producing great journalism and doing as much of it in audio as we possibly can. We are dipping our toes next month into audio subscriptions for the first time, and that's because The Economist has been a subscription business all along, and so it makes sense for us to try and do that for audio too. And I think we're out front, but I'm absolutely sure that within a few years, especially for news publishers like us who do charge for the print side of what we do, everyone will want to do the same eventually.
And do you anticipate that that's going to, you know, that the subscriptions are going to come from your existing print audience, or are you going to get new people in? Because, you know, the consumer are being pulled every which way for subscriptions. So do you really think that's the way to go? Is that what you're being told?
We announced this about 10 days ago now, and we knew, obviously we'd done our homework, and we already had an inkling that there are people out there who love what we do and maybe can't afford a full-on subscription to the magazine, but very keen to join in and contribute to our journalism in audio. So I think it's there's definitely a lot of Economist curious people out there who we can pull in.
The alternative business model for podcasts is the kind of advertising where you try and sell mattresses or cures for baldness. And as a podcast host, which I am at The Economist, you have to pretend that you love these products when the audience all knows that you're just being paid to say it. And one of the things about The Economist is we pride ourselves on our independence, and we think that we can do independent journalism better if our subscribers or our audience are paying us to do our jobs rather than taking money from advertisers to read out those kind of adverts. And all the feedback we've had from our listeners is that they value the kind of independence and the expertise that we bring to our podcast. I think one of the things that's a little bit different about what we do is that the classic podcast format is a couple of people talking to each other and pretending to be expert on what they're doing. I think we're humble enough to be able to go to the true experts. We have 300 odd journalists at The Economist, to go to the real experts in their fields who cover important subjects day in, day out, and ask them the answers rather than pretend to be know-it-alls ourselves. And then the last thing I'd say is that, you know, we try and cover the whole world, things that are important but maybe below the radar, like The Intelligence, our daily podcast, has been covering what's been going on in Nagorno-Karabakh recently. I don't think there are too many other podcast networks who do that. And actually, it turns out, because the podcast audience as a whole is so huge, there is a niche for people who want to really, really know what's going on in the world and understand it. And those are our listeners, and we're thankful to them, and also just delighted to win this.
With your audience as well, have you noticed any trends with them? Are they sort of demanding more visualization, for example? Are you wanting to, is that something that you're kind of exploring, to visualize more of your podcasts?
Well, the big thing for us in the last year is while a lot of competitors, I guess, especially in the big American podcast networks kind of pulled back from doing the kind of expensive long form stuff. We've actually doubled down on that in the last year, and we did two big series that were very successful. One was The Prince, about Xi Jinping, China's leader, and we did another one about Russia and the war in Ukraine, called Next Year in Moscow, and those did really well. And actually, not only were hugely popular with like our audience, with like foreign policy specialists, this kind of niche nerdy audience that we managed to pull in, but also with podcast listeners who just love a great story. That's what we're always trying to hit, that sort of sweet spot between subject experts and people who just want to listen to something that sounds compelling.
The thing I like most about our, or not the most, but one of the things that maybe tells you something about what we're trying to do at The Economist, our series about Xi Jinping, the prince, has been translated into Mandarin by podcast listeners in China and distributed around the country, even though if you were caught listening to that podcast by the Chinese Communist Party, you'd get in serious trouble and probably thrown in prison. So we're really proud of the kind of journalism we're trying to do, and we're going to do more of it in the years to come. And this award is a real sort of validation of that. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much. Cheers. Take it easy. Oh, thanks very much.
The Pod Hall of Fame Award goes to My Dad Wrote a Porno.
James.
Yes.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
Nice to meet you. I'm good, thank you.
Podcast royalty, let's face it.
Thank you. Yes, you may bow.
I have bowed. No, I've bowed curtsy. I can curtsy. Well, you've gone and won the Pod Hall of Fame Award. You've won a British Podcast Award before, but this must feel pretty great.
It feels really special. It's just nice. Now we finished, it feels like we've been put in a retirement home. It's like, okay, here's your, off you go now. No, but it feels, I was saying earlier, like, we still make the show like on microphones around the kitchen table, just balanced on books. Like, it's still very much independent. Like, it's our show. We completely own it. We edit it and everything. So to be kind of one of those shows from the kind of, that were the foundations of podcasting as far as the spirit of it, like, it's nice to be recognised when you're in a room of such amazing talent and big hitters and things like that. It's nice to feel, I know we did well and it was a big show, but we still feel like really independent, so it's nice to be honoured.
Yeah, and you know, it's testament to your rapport with one another, how successful you've been. And I think, I mean, it's fair to say that you became, and you are, in the best way, a cult. You've got a cult following. You've got a cult following in the best way. But you became really, really massive. And I think, I do wonder now, do you think that there's scope for a future My Dad Wrote a Porno? And I don't mean, you know, you guys doing it again. I just mean another, and you know, another person sort of getting to that level in the way that you guys did, the way that the media landscape's changed and it's become way more competitive now as well. Do you think that that will happen again for somebody else?
I really hope so. I mean, it's great that there's events like this that are kind of championing those, like, there's a real breadth of shows here. There's, like, you know, the global shows, and then there's kind of more grassroots shows and things like that. So there's definitely opportunities to still champion those shows that might not normally get the big promotion and things like that. We definitely benefited, I think, at the time from the moment we did it. And I think there's definitely space for, you know, I just think the right idea cuts through. And if you've got a good idea and a great, like, team behind it, it also depends what you define as success, right? Like, you know, not everything is going to end up being as lucky as we were, but you'll find your audience, and you can make, like, it's much easier these days to make a career from podcasting, even if you find a more kind of smaller, dedicated audience. So the landscape's changed, but I think there's still an opportunity for things to cut through, for sure. And I hope there continues to be platforms for that.
And in this new landscape that has changed, you know, for everybody within the industry, you know, we all acknowledge it. Where do you see your future? What are you got anything planned? You got anything in the pipeline?
Well, it's not the end of My Dad Wrote a Porno. I can't talk about it yet. Like, we said this in December when we finished, but we are developing kind of other ideas for it. So we still, like, we just felt like it was the right time for the podcast to end, but we feel like there's still stuff to be mined from the content, from the books, from the idea. We're talking about, you know, other podcasts. We're all writing at the moment. Yeah, it's been such a great platform for each of us to kind of take that next step into our careers. And I think whatever we do, we want to do something that we kind of own creatively, because we had such a special porno was so special in that respect. Like it felt like ours, and it felt like we owned it. So whatever we do next, I think we'd love to continue that. But it just has to be the right idea.
Well, best of luck with the future. I have no doubt that whatever it is, it's give it a massive success. And congratulations.
Thank you.
You can now retire quietly. Well, you're not retiring. Let's
I'm
just be clear.
I'm off to the home.
No, don't go to the home. Come back very soon.
So I'm Paul Brands, UK editor of ITV News, and our podcast was Partygate, The Inside Story. And this is David Williams, who produced and wrote the podcast.
A move for ITV into podcasts. Have ITV done many podcasts? I don't know. I should know this.
You shouldn't, because we didn't do any of huge repute until now, where Partygate sort of exploded and became a really big hit for us. You've done podcasts before, hadn't you? Acting Prime Minister for Paul and things, but Colin Peston had been done. But Partygate was our chance to kind of take listeners absolutely inside the heart of Downing Street, right at the heart of the biggest scandal of our lifetimes, probably. Paul had broken that scandal through for the whole of the year before, and it was our chance to offer, through the podcast medium, a completely different approach to that story. And you suddenly were taken in the key moments where parties were occurring and illegal events were occurring. You could find out what was happening in that room at the time, and like never before.
I mean, it's a massive story, isn't it? I mean, it still is, really. I feel like it's kind of just ongoing. The process must have been very tricky and complicated, because it's something that you're very consciously recording and putting together and putting out there. How did you find putting the series together?
So quite difficult, actually, because it was a control issue for me and my producer, Nathan Lee, because we had broken a lot of the stories around Partygate and trusted and had the trust of our sources not to reveal their identities. And it's one thing doing that on broadcast news, where you've just got a couple of minutes and it's really tightly controlled, but it's a very different thing in podcast format, when people want to know what happened behind the scenes and they want more detail. They want you to be more casual, more maybe blasé about the kind of discussion you're having, and you have to do that without then jeopardizing your source and dropping them in it. So the whole process, you know, David wrote it brilliantly, but for Nathan and I, it was kind of constantly checking to make sure we weren't overstepping the mark.
The award itself as well, I mean, what does it mean for you? As you say, so ITV haven't really been able to cut through in podcasts, so what does it mean?
It's everything. It's you know, it was a heck of a lot of work. It was like 9 months of work. Paul's probably the busiest journalist in the UK, and it was finding time for us to communicate and build a script together, and hours and hours of editing, hours and hours of archiving and everything. I mean, for that to come together and release and be a big hit in terms of the charts, we were number one in Apple News, we were second in the chart overall. For a story that at the start of it was, we were starting on that project at the end of Partygate, really, when it felt like no one wanted to hear the word ever again. So for us to bring out something which offered a new entry into a story of our era, and to tell what has become pretty much the definitive document of the era, it's quoted in the Reuters Digital Report as the example of documentary podcasting. So for us to produce that, and then tonight win an award, which we genuinely, at the point of seeing the competition on stage and having that reinforcement of those enormous names of podcasts that everybody knows, and we've been given the Spotlight Award, it doesn't get better than that for us. So it's a phenomenal achievement, an amazing team. I could list several names for you, but it's such a fantastic achievement. We're delighted to be here.
I've spoken to quite a few news podcasts tonight as well. Where do you sort of see the future of podcasting within news? Do you think that people are going to step away more from, you know, watching their news in the traditional way, just on the TV in the evening or on linear and radio, and go more to these sort of more in-depth stories and maybe daily news podcasts? Is that something that you expect will happen?
Potentially. I mean, I think people are just getting a lot more eclectic in the way that they consume their news. So in days gone by, they might have either opted for a newspaper or a news bulletin on television, whereas now they might do a bit of everything. They might have their app, they might have their newspaper, they might have a news bulletin, they might have a podcast. And I don't think we should be too prescriptive about news necessarily moving in one direction or one medium. I think people are quite happy to actually have complementary media all, you know, being consumed all at the same time. And for me, I think the key to Partygate was being able to drill down into a story in the way that you wouldn't be able to hear about that story on any other medium. So you're not going to get that level of detail on TV news. You're not going to get that insight and hear the voices of sources in a newspaper. But in a podcast mode, you can be so much more intimate. You can be so much more revealing. So I think all of these types of media are actually very complementary.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My name is Shante Joseph. I am the host of the Guardians Pop Culture Podcast that comes out every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
And you've won. What's the award you've won?
So I've won a Rising Star Award.
Yeah, you can tell.
Star, I'm rising.
You can totally tell that that's the award you've won. If I had to guess out of all of the awards after that introduction, I'd be like, yeah, Rising Star, definitely. That must feel pretty exciting. You excited?
Can I tell you something? Yeah, nah. No one believes me. Podcasts are what I live and breathe and eat and sleep. Like, every single day, I probably listen to like 2-3 podcasts. Like, and I'm like, I'm invested. Like, I pay for my Wondery subscription. Like, I'm not joking. Like, this industry is so, so important to me. And I give and I share and I talk. Like, literally, it's my life. And so winning an award like this means so much to me because it's an industry that I care a lot about. It's an industry I'm very invested in. And I fucking love podcasts and I love hosting a podcast. It's the biggest honor, I think. And it's just a wonderful media format and I love it so much. And I'm so happy to be here. You know, there's a picture that always goes viral on Twitter and it's a poster of like these two girls laughing eating yogurt and then another little girl like in real life is sat next to the poster laughing. And that's what listening to a podcast is like. It's like these people that like don't know me but they're having a conversation or they're investigating something and they're like being really they're like talking to me even though they're talking to each other. And it's like very intimate as an art form. And also just like in terms of like disseminating information, like sometimes it's not like sitting and watching something can be a bit too like arduous. You want something to be with you on the go. You want to stay informed on the go. You want to stay entertained. You want to feel like you have company. Walking home by myself, lockdown as well, when you're going on them long ass park walks because there's nothing else to do, you're just like, what can I bring with me? You can't walk and watch Netflix. Like if you're in a restaurant, like you want to sit and put your phone up, you want to listen to something. So it's like, it's the perfect companion. Like podcasts are companionship and that's what makes them so engaging and so dynamic. And like when you find something you love, that's it, you're hooked into an ecosystem where there's just so much content to speak to you because you're like, wow, this is a friend more than it is like a thing to be entertained by.
As an avid listener and someone who, you know, clearly loves podcasts and hosts podcasts, mm-hmm. What do you want to see from the industry? Is there things that you'd like to see change?
Yes. One thing I want to see, I have been getting into my audio drama bag. I am obsessed with audio dramas. Wondery, they make a good audio drama. And I just find it such a great way to basically like just consume like a very engaging story. And I think podcasting needs to really like push the audiobook girlies. Because I was a judge for the book awards and I did the audiobook category and it was good, but I'm like, when I listen to audio dramas, I'm like, these are people who care about the craft, these are people who care about the way that they are translating information to an audience. Like they're thinking so much about the sounds and the design, and I'm like, wow, I want the effort that goes into creating audible experiences to seep into everything else that we do across media that is about listening. And so I want to see more of that. I want to, you know how the Dolby Atmos have like started to collaborate with some podcast companies to create those like 360 surround sound experiences and whatnot. I want to see more of that, more technology, and I want to be more diverse as well. I feel like there's not a lot of black people, even like black women here running awards, telling stories, and so I want to see more of that. I think that would be amazing. And I want to see like younger people getting into it as well. Like obviously I know the Gen Z girlies love a chat show, but I really want them to do more investigative stuff. Like one thing about the girlies on TikTok, the young girlies, they know how to tell a compelling story. They know how to investigate something. I think of Tabbygate, the guy that found the girl on Tinder and then stole her shoes, but just the way that turned into huge news. Like imagine if we encourage a lot of these people on these platforms, particularly Gen Z, to start thinking about how they tell these stories in an audio format. Banging.
It's interesting what you say about the drama. Would you go for an audio drama over watching EastEnders?
1,000%. 1,000%. There is not a moment of silence in my house. There is not a moment of silence in my house.
I believe
it. I have podcasts on from the moment I open my eyes until I go to sleep. I even do that thing on Spotify when you can set the timer. Yeah, yeah. So when you're falling asleep, it'll turn off after 5 minutes. That's how much I listen to podcasts, you know. I go to sleep to podcasts.
It's so lovely speaking with you. You have so much energy. I have no doubt. They've got it bang on. Rising star. You're going to be... Next time I'm in here, you'll just ignore me. You're just...
We're going to be best friends from now on.
There we go. Oh, well, thank you so much. By the way, your nails as well. Absolutely
thank
incredible.
Thank you so much. Literally, 3 hours. It's going to be 3 hours to get my nails done. Every month. But I love it. We listen to podcasts while we do my nails.
Thanks to Ollie Pitt and all his work on those interviews. Me, I've got back home after a brilliant British Podcast Awards 2023. You can find out all the winners over at podcastrex.com. That's podcastrex.com. So that's the media podcast for this week. I'm Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, with great support from Ollie Pitt. It's a Rethink Audio production. We'll see you next week for a regular show.